Good evening, everyone. Welcome to City Council meeting of October 15th. Tonight, the Pledge of Allegiance will be recited by Councilmember Mark Zimmer.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Mark. A roll call, please.
Mayor Griffin?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmer?
Here.
Councilmember Ward?
Here.
Councilmember Wirtz is absent. Councilmember Gibbons?
Here.
Councilmember Sears?
Here.
Councilmember Dewey?
Here.
Thank you. And then I'd like to ask City Attorney John Hessel to put in the minutes sunshine law requirements during a pandemic.
Will do, Mayor. As I've mentioned far too many times now, Section 610.015 of the Missouri Sunshine Law provides members of the City Council who are not physically present in the council chambers can participate and vote on all matters when an emergency exists and the nature of the emergency must be stated in the minutes. So again, I would ask that the minutes reflect that unfortunately we are continuing in this pandemic with COVID-19, that the City Council is meeting remotely to avoid the spread of the coronavirus, to protect each other as well as the public health and safety of everyone. So let the minutes reflect that, please. Thank you.
Thank you, John. We do have one presentation. It's a proclamation to Horizon St. Louis in Kirkwood. And I think we have with us Lakeisha Robinson, the executive director. Hello, Lakeisha. Welcome.
Hello, hello. Excited to be here.
Great. Nice to see you. I'm going to go ahead and read the proclamation. Lori is going to actually put, I think she's going to put it up on the screen. The official one.
Just trying to find it here real quick.
Okay.
All right. All right, hopefully. There we go.
There we go, and I'm gonna go ahead and read that. Whereas Horizon St. Louis and Kirkwood, formerly known as Sprague Inc., has been transforming the lives of our area's underserved youth since 1970, and Sprague's recent affiliation with Horizons National has provided significant resources to enable the program to achieve its ambitious mission. Horizon St. Louis and Kirkwood has collaborated with the Kirkwood School District to focus on moderating students' traditional summer slide and is better positioned to inspire brighter futures for students most in need by providing opportunities to experience high-quality academics, engaging enrichment activities, and healthy life skills. Horizon St. Louis and Kirkwood has re-energized and expanded its commitment to remaining an integral part of our community. Now, therefore, I, Timothy E. Griffin, Mayor of the City of Kirkwood, on behalf of the Kirkwood City Council, do hereby proclaim the week of October 18, 2020 as Horizon St. Louis and Kirkwood Week and encourage academic, business, civic, and community leaders to mark this week through a program, project, or outreach that raises funds or awareness of Horizon St. Louis in Kirkwood. Lakeisha, would you like to say just a couple words?
Absolutely. We are so excited, so humbled to receive this, especially in a year like this being our 50th year. It's just amazing. So we are so excited for that. I want to thank the mayor and Kirkwood Electric for your support. And this whole community has truly shown up. It's really shown out for our kids. And I have no doubt within the next 50 years, we're definitely going to be able to close these educational gaps within our community. So I'm so excited and thank you all so much.
Great. Well, thank you, Keisha. Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming on with us.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Now we will move on. We have a public hearing this evening, which is a request for a site plan for a 12-unit, four-story residential building on the combined properties of 134 and 138 West Madison Avenue. Mr. Hessel, do you wish to enter any exhibits into the record?
I would, Mayor. I would offer as Exhibit 1 the affidavit of publication verifying that notice of this public hearing appeared in the St. Louis County. And Exhibit 2 is an affidavit of publication verifying notice of public hearing appeared in the Webster Kirkwood Times. Isn't it nice to say that?
Yes.
3 is the viewer map showing the location of the property as well as the surrounding properties. Exhibit 4 is a list of property owners to whom notice of this hearing has been sent. Exhibit 5 is a report of the Planning and Zoning Commission dated September 17, 2020, in which the commission recommended approval of the site plan for a 12-unit, four-story residential building on the combined properties of 134 and 138 West Madison Avenue. Exhibit 6 is the report of the subcommittee of the Planning and Zoning Commission dated September 16, 2020. And Exhibit 7 is the Code of Ordinances of the City of Kirkwood.
Thank you, John. And before we turn it over to Jonathan to make the presentation, I would just like to remind all the people, residents watching, that this is a legally required public hearing on this. There will be no council vote on this tonight. You won't hear from council if they're in support or opposed to this. This is an opportunity to ask questions. Some will ask a lot of questions, some may ask none. That does not indicate their support or opposition to this. So with that, Mr. Hawes, who will present this to the City Council?
That'll be Planning and Services Director Jonathan Raich.
Welcome, Jonathan.
I just realized I was muted. Sorry about that. all right. Can you all see the presentation slides?
Yes.
All right. Yes. Sorry about that. All right. Thank you. So this is the public hearing for a site plan review, multifamily building, 12-unit multifamily building, as mentioned, on the combined property of the 134 and 138 West Madison Avenue. This is the subject site. It's approximately 13,500 square feet on the south side of Madison Avenue. Near the intersection of Clay. I'll show a few more. This is another view looking southward, actually, and these aerial photos are pretty up to date, but still outdated. But you see the first Madison Avenue building there under construction, the parking lot still as dirt in the photo on the left here. But this is, again, looking towards the south. The subject site has the pin in it there, so it's the two buildings at 134, 130. And then as you all see in the photos here, this is the subject site, two buildings, the blue building and the beige building, tan building. And you'll note the aerial photo I mentioned being out of date, as you can tell, because I'm sure you're all aware, the adjacent 14-unit, four-story multifamily building right next door to this one is up, and these pictures are already outdated also. But we're talking about the site directly adjacent to the one under construction, south of the police station, city hall, next to the public lot. So again, this is for a multifamily in the B2 district under certain circumstances is a permitted use. And I'll show a slide on that as well, but this is permitted use and multifamily development. So we're talking about site plan review and the most relevant considerations for the council is that to determine whether the proposed site plan meets the various site development standards, like buffering, landscaping, parking, lighting, et cetera. But also I'd like to call out for everyone's benefit to remember that the council does have the ability, it's written into our code, not going against the code, but written into the code that the council has the ability to modify requirements, certain requirements, according to section A 220.2. And that will be relevant. I have a slide on that as it pertains specifically to this proposal as well. But those are all proper considerations within the provisions of our code. We also have general criteria listed in section A 220.7. All right, moving on. This is what I wanted to show as far as permitted uses. So the star, the red star, in towards the middle left side of this diagram, this slide, you can see my cursor here. This is the subject site roughly. And what I wanted to show here is that multifamily development without commercial is a permitted use in the downtown B2 district, so long as it is not located on a street that is identified as suggested or mandatory commercial in our downtown master plan framework plan. And that mouthful is just to say that if the subject site is not on one of these red lined properties, then they do not need commercial as part of their proposal. So this project is not sited on one of those streets, and it does not require commercial. So it is available as a permitted use for for multifamily residential. This is a look at the proposed site plan. So this plan, it's the subject site, the two properties, they are, if you can see my cursor again, they are towards the left of the screen, and I'll explain the reason why it goes out further east in a moment here. But again, what you see here is the floor plan, and this is actually the first floor, which is the structured parking, 24 structured parking spaces that are proposed on the ground level, lower level. It does go down. It has a proposed, on the left side of the screen, which would be the west side of the development, what they're proposing is a shared drive with the Barclay, the development that's under construction now to the west. So there would be a 24-foot wide shared driveway that would serve both this proposed project and the one under construction. And it would go down, slightly downgrade to the lower entrance of this into the parking garage. And once you get to the end of the drive, you could either go right into the Barclay or left into this proposed development if approved. But the parking here, it's the parking sizes and number does meet the minimum requirements of our code. We require 1.5 spaces, so they exceed that requirement for, they're providing 2 spaces per unit. So I mentioned it's a 13,500 square foot lot. They're proposing 12 units in 4 stories. Let's see if I can show, that's the landscape. Before I go into landscaping there, the makeup, the floor plan of the building is that, such that there would be 4 units on the first and second floor. And then the third and fourth floors would each have larger, 2 units each and larger units. And you'll see in the elevations provided that I'll show later, the building steps back as it goes up, which dictates some of the size of the units as well. I'll go through those architectural reasons too, and I'm sure the applicant will elaborate on those. But so we're talking about 4 stories, 12 units, total height of 50 feet, 10.5 inches, square footage, total residential square footage of just over 34,700, which is a floor area ratio of 2.57, and I'll talk about that a little bit here later too. The proposed landscape plan for this development is shown here on the slide. What we have proposed for consideration is the 4 street trees would be, they are required and they are shown as provided on Madison. They also have 2 additional understory trees that go above and beyond what are the minimum requirements of our code that are shown at the front of the building. They have 10 additional evergreen trees along the south property line that are also above and beyond the minimum requirements of our code. And then they have various shrubs and plants along the north and the eastern portion. So this orientation of this slide, I'm sorry, north is left. So you have Madison Avenue on the left here, and the eastern or the top of the slide is the city-owned public parking lot there. So along with these, to accommodate the proposed building, there is a proposed removal of 2 existing street trees that are both calorie pears, and they've already actually received approval from the city to remove those street trees, and they would be replacing the 2 due to their condition and species. They would be replacing those 2 with the 4 trees you see here. Right. Here's a look at their black and white line drawing elevations, and the slide here shows the south, southern, and northern elevations. So the elevation looking from Madison Avenue, and then the elevation opposite that. And what these actually show, just for some reference again, the top is the south elevation. And the darker line building on the right of the top portion is the subject property. The more subdued grayed out elevation on the left is actually the Barclay, which is under construction now, already approved under construction. So they wanted to show the correlation of these two buildings. And I'm sure they'll go into this, but they see these as what they call, I think, sister buildings, and a lot of similarities in design and sharing, shared drive, a lot of commonality. So they wanted to show how these two would relate in terms of bulk and size. And so you have the southern elevation, the back elevation on the top, the front elevation of this building along Madison Avenue on the bottom there. And then you can see it a little bit, the step back that I mentioned. I think it'll be easier to see here on these next elevations. So these are the east and west elevations. Again, I'll just pick the bottom. The west elevation you see here, this would be the left side of the screen is the facade facing Madison. So you see the main entrance here, if you can see my cursor. And what you see is a series of step backs so that there's an outdoor space. The parking garage comes out here at ground level, is partly undergrade. And then above that parking deck, there's an outdoor space for the first two floors with balconies for the second. And then as you go up to the third, there's another step back even further from the street. So it helps alleviates the presence of the structure on the street and softens that some. And then as you go up even further, with further setbacks, step backs going up. So as I mentioned, the code does permit consideration and permits the applicant to request modifications to certain requirements. The pertinent ones that we're discussing tonight would be our density measurement, which is our code is measures it in square foot, lot square footage per unit. So the requirement is for 1,200 square feet of lot area per unit. This development comes in just under that at 1,128 square feet per unit for a difference of 72 square feet per unit. And then the floor area ratio requirement, I mentioned that earlier, it is a 2.5 requirement, meaning that the floor area of the building can be no more than 2.5 times the lot area. So the lot area being 13,500, you take that times 2.5, that's their maximum floor area allowed. And they come in just over that at 2.57, which equates in this instance to an additional 919 square feet of floor area. And then the building height of 40, it is for single-use buildings in the B2 district. The requirement is a maximum of 40 feet in height. They are requesting a height of 50 feet and 10.5 inches for a difference of 10 feet, 10.5 inches. I'm sure they will elaborate on this, but as shown by the side-by-side elevations, the overall building height is almost or identical to the approved building that did receive a modification for heights when it came through. Not to say that this one has to be approved, but part of these that I'll go over in the site plan as well is as justification or to warrant these modifications being granted in our code, the developer is required to provide additional benefit above and beyond the code requirements. I mentioned a few of those. They are providing some additional landscaping above and beyond the minimum requirements. And I think at this point too, I'm going to go back to the site plan to explain a couple of the other items for public benefit that came out of this. The discussions from the Planning and Zoning Commission subcommittee and during that process. So the developer, again, the reason this plan is shown zoomed out to show more property to the east is that originally they had proposed to provide public sidewalk in front of it as required, and they proposed to widen it to 6 feet wide, which would be consistent with the Barclay, the previously approved project. It is a little bit wider than a standard 5 foot wide commercial sidewalk. There are sidewalks that are wider in other places in downtown, but the existing sidewalk to the east is actually 5 feet. So what the recommendation and discussion that came out of the Planning and Zoning Commission subcommittee was really recommended to extend that sidewalk widening through minimally through the city-owned parking lot property. So off-site improvement of approximately, I believe, 100 feet in length of extra sidewalk off-site to widen that to improve additional pedestrian, enhanced pedestrian experience. The commission and the applicants both discussed the possibility of extending it all the way through. There is one, if you see my cursor, there's one single family home that exists on the block, and they are seated between the public parking lot and then the first multifamily building that was built on this block. And there was discussion about and a willingness from the developer to extend that widened sidewalk through their property as well. Staff just advised or recommended that the language for that portion be completely subject to the desires of this property owner for a couple of reasons. They, you know, this does, the sidewalk widening would require interruption, you know, during construction. It also could likely mean a removal of a large tree that's in the tree lawn. I don't know that for certain. However, it would be very possible. And I do know for a fact, because City Hall's right across the street, they recently did improvements within the past few years to their driveway. And we just want to be cognizant of those private improvements that they've done and make sure that, you know, we would not be forcing anything on them that they would not want. So, but the applicant did agree to pursuing that and to providing that if the homeowner wanted to widen the sidewalk out to 6 feet wide all the way to the eastern property border with that property. But at minimum, it would be extended to the eastern property line of the city-owned parking lot. The additional pedestrian improvement that the subcommittee suggested and the applicant agreed to was to provide a mid-block crossing that would be situated between the public-owned parking lot and the police department across the street. There's an existing landscape island between the two entrances to the parking lot, public parking lot, and then there is actually a sidewalk almost exactly across that goes all the way to the curb. Somebody had educated me on this. I think it was a coach or carriage approach or something when it doesn't have the ramp and was there, but, you know, led to the carriages or the stagecoaches that were picking up people. Anyway, the intent would be at the applicant's cost, they would provide ADA accessible ramps on the south and northern side of Madison Avenue to provide a mid-block striped and signed pedestrian crossing. And it was discussed in the Planning Zoning Commission that this would be a good benefit with the amount of traffic, you know, between the police department, City Hall, the parking lot across. There's also a park, as you all know, on the other corner of this. So there's a lot of activity and a lot of opportunity for people that do now cross in this location. You know, saw it as a positive benefit to the community that would be above and beyond the normal provisions of our code as a means for the applicant to attempt to justify the modifications requested. So some of the other items that were discussed at Planning and Zoning Commission were that I mentioned the shared drive. Currently the driveway that was proposed and approved to serve the one property was only going to be 20 feet wide and did require a modification to be under 22 feet wide. With this building, they could increase that to a full 24 foot wide access and drive. The commission cited that as a positive thing to provide better circulation between the buildings into the buildings. They also recommended the off-site pedestrian enhancements that I just went through explaining for public benefit. And then the commission did acknowledge and point out that the building design made a good effort and a successful effort to mitigate the appearance of the building height, since they are requesting additional building height above the 40-foot requirement. It was clear to the commission that the applicant took that into consideration in their design and took appropriate measures to lessen the appearance of that height. The Planning and Zoning Commission did recommend approval at their meeting by a vote of 9-0. And some of those conditions that I'd like to note out is they did recommend approval of the modifications explained earlier. They recommended a condition that would require the 6-foot-wide exposed aggregate sidewalk on-site and off-site, as explained, as well as the mid-block pedestrian crossing. They're also required to provide a revised lighting plan. Just because of the proximity of their front porch to the street, there's just some conflicts there. That basically, the light from their proposed lighting currently would be a little higher than our code allows out onto the street, but staff's pretty confident that we can take care of that during the permit review. And they would, because it is two separate properties, two legal lots right now, they would be required to do a consolidation plat prior to permits being issued for the construction, if approved. So this is a site plan review request. It does require a public hearing, and that's why we're here tonight. After that, it would be brought back to the council for their consideration of a drafted resolution and voted on it at one meeting for that resolution. With that, I am available for questions, and I know the applicant does have representatives here as well.
Thank you. So the applicant has a presentation to make?
Yes.
If we can get them on there.
If you can bring on Tyler Stevens, there we go. Yep.
Good evening, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. It's nice to see you all tonight. Jonathan did a great job of going through the bulk of the presentation, so I'll just hit some highlights. Couple things. So I'm going to share my screen with you at this point. Okay. Can you all see that?
Yeah.
Okay. So you know where the property is. So we won't go through that. A lot of this started, of course, with the downtown master plan that you all approved several years ago. And this particular project is really kind of the completion of a series of projects that we've been doing down Madison Avenue, starting at the Madison One on the corner, the Barclay on the far corner, and now this being the third and final piece in the middle of the block. And I say final because I do want to emphasize the fact that both Savoy and I think the city and everyone sees this as the completion of the block. That's why we're talking a lot about some of the site improvements that go down the block, the pedestrian crosswalk, those types of things. And having that public parking lot in the middle, which is used quite heavily, is a good sort of buffer for all of this. So we view this as part of what the master plan is calling the missing middle housing, which are these smaller scale residential developments. They've been very popular with the buyers. The success of the market has been proven through these couple buildings that we've done, and demand is certainly there for the third building, which is why we're here tonight. This gives you an overview of the whole block that Jonathan just went over, but it shows it in color, so maybe you can see it a little bit better. You can see the first building on the corner, that's what we call the Madison here. Then on the far corner, the Barclay, which is under construction, this new building here in red, and this new building and the Barclay are very much tied together. They're very much a pair. So we'll talk about that tonight, how they work together. And then there you can see in yellow, the crosswalk, as Jonathan mentioned, coming from the center of the parking lot. And there's that apron that he was talking about with the police department directly across the street. This is a 12-unit building, 24 parking spaces. That's really, as he mentioned, it's above and beyond the parking requirements, but that's really what's demanded in the marketplace. People buying these condominiums really want two parking spaces, so that's why we provide it that way. And you can see the scale of the footprint here very well, these two buildings together. That shows in terms of the mass, they're really very similar buildings in terms of massing and size. And that's also similar to the first building. But I do want to point out that all three buildings are unique in terms of their design, their floor plans, their unit plans. We did not want to do three buildings that were just repeated down the street. So they are very unique, but they go together as a set. And you'll see that here when I show the renderings. This is just by way of reminder, of course, you all know this is across the street from where we are sitting right now. We're actually, the whole team is here in the job trailer, which is where we're presenting live from tonight. This is the Madison across the street. This is the city parking lot. There's that island right in the middle where the crosswalk will be installed. You can see the house on the left that remains. These are the two properties in the middle. And then this is a rendering of the Barclay as it will be completed down on the far corner. So you can see how they all go together as a set on the street. Here is a blow up of the two together. You can see the shared driveway, the landscaping, the relationship of one to another. They still follow the same model, which is a garage below grade, which acts as a porch on the front level. These porches were originally chosen in the designs of these buildings as being a characteristic of Kirkwood. It's very much a porch community, so we wanted to include that, and that's really proven itself in the buyers. I can tell you that these first floor units are just as in demand as the penthouse units because of the large porches. Everybody wants that space where they can walk out, and that's all over the roof of the garage, so it helps to hide it and mitigate it and then make the building look smaller as it goes up because it's continually stepping back. Jonathan mentioned the step backs in this building. That really came out of demand of the market as well. A lot of people wanted exterior space. That's very popular. The units have big decks. So we decided in this building, rather than doing three stories that are all the same with a penthouse that's different, we would do two stories and then two penthouse levels. And each of those penthouse levels has two units and has large exterior terraces, which is what creates the step backs that Jonathan was describing. This is a rendering of the two together, so you can see that as it all kind of unfolds in three dimensions. This building here to the right is the Barclay that's under construction right now. You see the shared drive going down between them. And then this is the proposed building here on the left. Here are the step backs that were being described. You can see these on the first floor, second floor, third floor, and then the penthouse that's in the back. It switches back there. But everybody gets a really large exterior terrace, which is really what people want. That helps make the building look smaller as it shrinks back up the street. You can see we're using similar materials for the two, similar design language and details, so that they will definitely go together but be different designs. The other thing I wanted to point out, as Jonathan was mentioning, the code modifications, these same code modifications came up with the Madison 1, and then they came up with the Barclay as well. So it's very similar, all three buildings, in terms of their massing, the floor area ratio, the square footage per unit, and then the building height. This diagram shows the proposed building on the left with the Barclay on the right. As you can see, they're the same height, their floors match up. The technical dimension of this one is 1 foot taller than the Barclay. And that is because the ground, the site, actually falls 1 foot as it goes from the west to the east. So it is technically 1 foot taller, but their roofs will line up and everything matches. So in the end, we think that this is a really good sort of completion to the block. This was the original intent that Savoy had when they started this development series on the block. Proud to build it out. It's been very successful in the marketplace. All the units in the Barclay are sold already, and it hasn't even finished construction. And there's a waiting list already for this third building. So it's definitely the type of product that people want. And we like it because and I think there's a reason why people like it, is it is the smaller scale, close to the street kind of development. Where it feels like an extension of a large home. Each building creates its own little community. And so we present it to you tonight. I hope that you agree that this is going to be a good thing for the city of Kirkwood.
Thank you, Tyler. All right, we will now, anything else, Jonathan? Any other comments before we go on to council questions?
No, sir.
All right, thank you.
Would you like me to stop the screen share or keep it up?
We've got the plans. Let's take it down for now. We can always bring it back up if needed.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, we will go to the council, and our order tonight starts with Councilmember Zimmer.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. One question, or just an observation maybe for the applicant looking at this. These were mentioned as sister buildings, and you mentioned that all three are not alike, obviously, and you've tried to make them unique. As far as the materials on the outside, are they going to be, is there going to be some uniqueness between these two buildings, especially since it's right next to the Barclay, to give some, you know, some architectural differences as far as appearance and color?
Yes, the original building, the first one, these are nuances that I don't know if a whole lot of people notice, but it has a dark charcoal slate tile, for instance, that's down all around the base, creating this kind of dark base to it. On the Barclay, we took that slate and moved it all the way to the roof around the penthouse and introduced a dark brick instead at the base to kind of give it a different feel, different language. We like the color consistency in terms of the charcoal and the light grays and that are going on in all the buildings. So we want to keep kind of a consistent color scheme. But the placement of those materials, there are patterns in the brick, different details. Those are all different in each one and have the ability to kind of mix and match them so that you can tell that they go together, but they are different.
Okay, great. And yep. You mentioned that the insides of the buildings are different. You specifically talked about having two penthouse levels. As far as the steps that go back on the corners of the front, do you offhand know the distance back that the levels go back, as far as from the street, the distance from the street to the level, and then how far back that goes, just to have an idea of what it's going to look like in real life?
Sure. I don't know the exact, you know, foot and inch, but I can tell you that each of those steps is approximately 15 feet. That 15 feet is a good depth for those terraces as they go back. And then the other thing to mention, which as part of that and goes back to your first question about difference between the buildings, when they do step back like that, on this building, the back of the step back is all glass. So pretty much everything facing the street, because these terraces are oriented towards the street rather than to the side, the facade of the building facing the street is mostly glass. And so what you see are these 15-foot differences and then a glass wall, another 15 feet, another glass wall.
Okay. Okay, great. Well, I think you answered my questions. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Councilmember Ward, you're next.
Yeah, Tyler, thanks for coming in this evening. Just maybe one or two questions for me. We, and it's been stated, the city's ordinances allow for us to amend projects if they warrant it. And in order to avoid our codes and ordinances, which are and zoning, which are hard fought. I wouldn't like it to dissolve into being just a suggestion to developers or property owners. With that in mind, could you tell us what moved you to and what was peculiar about this site that you felt it warranted us waiving the codes and ordinances we have for that site?
Certainly. These buildings, if you notice, there is a pattern that's repeated, and it's not just these buildings in Kirkwood. I've been building buildings like this for over 15 years in various municipalities, and I can just tell you that the economics of it is that what really works well, what creates a good floor plan that people want to buy, is when you have four units on a floor. So just think about it as a big square and everybody has a corner. That's the way these buildings lay out really well in a small scale development. So when you have four units on a floor and you go up three stories, that's a 12 unit building. And that's sort of 12 units is really the entry level in terms of making the economics work with land prices and sales prices and various things. If you get more than that, it's even better. At the Barclay, we were able to get 14 units because of the way the top worked, and we had these two penthouses above. And this one, because of the size of the lot, it's only 12 units. A lot of that is dictated by parking count as well. So that's really what, you know, is the starting point of making these buildings work. And they're all that same sort of mass. When you just plan them out and then you do the math backwards and you see where you are, I mean, the fact that it's 2.57 on the FAR, where 2.5 is what's allowed, I mean, that's telling you that you're doing the right, you know, you're in the right zone. It's right there. It is slightly over. That's simply due to the fact that parking spaces take up a certain amount of space, and to get two per unit, you know, which is what the market wants, you end up with a certain size garage. So that's why it's slightly over. The height is purely a product of having that the three stories with the penthouse, which is what, just frankly, I mean, what you need to have to make a project like this work. So it's not excessively tall. It ends up at that 50-foot mark. And you know, I would also say that some of that is how you all measure height, which is to the peak of the roof, as opposed to like the mean of the roof, which would make it 45 in a typical municipality. This is 50, but it's all within that range. So that's really the explanation of it. I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you. Councilmember Gibbons.
Jonathan, I have a question for you. One of the things that Marina said when she was here was that we don't want those monolithic skylines. And this seems like this is that. Am I correct on that?
No. So I guess I think some of the elevation that you have to consider is horizontal and not just vertical. So I think your point is you're referencing the fact that Marina said, you know, people will always build to the maximum height, and that's what we're getting. So actually the point there was that we shouldn't be measuring by feet, right? We should be measuring by story. If we measured by story and we said it was four story maximum, they could come in with a 50 foot and a 55 foot and a 45 foot, and there would be variation. However, because we have chosen not to take the recommendation of measuring by stories and we keep it at feet, this is what we have. They are building to the maximum height. However, to offset the mundane or just, you know, consistent roof line, they have certainly done what they can from a horizontal perspective in design. I would guess with Marina's architectural background, she would certainly say, I would think she would say that is working within our code. It is providing as much relief as they can.
Because it's 25% over what our code is. The other three, the other two modifications are insignificant, the 25%. I have a question about, Tyler, for you, with regards to the tree study that you were required to do. And it looks like four trees are being saved, but those aren't on your property. Am I right on that?
The four trees, I'm not exactly sure if I know which four trees you're talking about.
I can verify that. That's correct. So this report shows there are removal of two street trees and I think two maybe on-site trees. The city requires them to show off-site trees that are within a certain distance so that they show that they will preserve those. So they are required to show those. So that we know that they're not going to damage those offsite trees.
I guess it's, I'm just kind of emphasizing that I don't, and then it has nothing to do with this project, but I don't understand why we even require a tree study when all the trees are allowed to be taken down anyway.
Yeah, it would. I think developers would certainly be glad to not provide them. I think the city in the past, we've never had a tree preservation requirement. I think the goal or the effort that it makes is it provides the information so that if there are trees that can be preserved, so it makes the developer think about those trees that the city says are important, like the project on Big Bend, right, the post oak. It provides that information to the developer and to the community to identify and have conversations about those things, to get them looking in the direction of preserving what they can and what might be in good health. The other thing is that the studies not only show the locations, but it shows the species and the condition of those trees. And those are things noted in it as well that help provide the important information of whether something's worth discussing saving or not. I think it's a good question as to why I actually get that question fairly often. Why are we showing them if we're not required to save them? And that's the response I gave to you is the response I give to the developers. So.
Thank you.
So if I may, I can add just a little bit to both of those questions. I mean, certainly the tree study, if there's a significant tree on site, I've been involved in projects before where there was a significant tree here in Kirkwood and the project had to be redesigned around that tree. So I think that's what it gives you that information. In this particular case, we're talking about Bradford pear in one instance. You know, these are not significant trees to be saved. And then with regards to your height question, I showed that elevation where it shows the two buildings even. And flat elevations are for architects. They're very deceptive drawings. You never see a building in flat elevation. And so when you stand on the corner of the street and you look up, you see all the variations of the roof and this you know, various cuts and steps. It makes for a skyline that's not monolithic flat across there. If you go out and stand on the corner of Clay and Madison right now and just look up at the Barclay, it's a real good example of that because it has so many jogs in and out, even though from a flat elevation, it would look like a straight line.
Thank you.
All right, Councilmember Sears, anything?
I have no questions, thank you.
All right, Councilmember Dewey.
Yes, I have concerns. The good things is that it does fit in with the neighborhood, albeit that you've now changed the neighborhood, and it allows people to live downtown. Parking is available. Sidewalks are good. 12 units sounded good. But then I got to the modifications, and specifically, just like always, it's about height, and it's always about height. Everybody's doing it. Not everybody's doing it, but you are almost always doing it, pushing the height. 40 feet is code. And you want nearly 11 feet more, as Liz said, 25% more. It's kind of the same old story. So I agree to a point, we can be flexible with the zoning code, but not without limit. If we don't abide by the zoning code or very close to the code we wrote, I start to wonder why we have a code. And I get it that it's a sister building and we may sort of be stuck with what there is at this point. But I really hope we start reining in on this height. I totally know you will want any other building in the neighborhood or any other Kirkwood neighborhood to push out height restrictions. This isn't going to stop now. So I'm just not real willing to discard our height restrictions over and over. That's it.
I think that's a fair comment. And the 50 feet, just in a little bit of perspective, that actually is the height. If this were a mixed-use building, which could be built on the same block in the same area, then 50 feet would be the height. So it's very possible to have another building the same height right next door, just because one's mixed use and one's all residential doesn't necessarily change the fact that they're in scale with one another. And I just go back to the economics of it again, that if, and U City is a great example of this. U City changed their height restriction some years ago down to 35 feet for these types of buildings. And there's not been a single one built since. You can't do it. You need 3.5 stories to make this kind of building work. And 3.5 stories is always going to be in that 45 to 50 foot range.
So if I may, making it work means making it work for you.
Well, making it work for the city of Kirkwood, because if it doesn't work for the developer, then they're not built, and then nobody, you know, then the residents can't buy them.
Okay, I'm going to stop there.
Yeah,
public hearing is not a debate back and forth. It's
sure,
time to ask questions. No, no, I meant that.
No,
always.
I apologize.
Yeah, always. So that's when we have first reading on. When we have not first reading, when we have this table, that would be a good time for debate on that. Okay, that's it for council questions and comments. Do we have any citizens wishing to make comments on this?
There are two.
Okay.
Barbara, you should be able to talk.
Barbara, if you're talking, you are. It shows you're muted. Barbara, if you're trying to talk, you've got yourself muted. If you could unmute yourself.
Mayor, may I also state, while we wait for Barbara to unmute, those wishing to make a public comment on this public hearing, please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
All right. Why don't we go on and we'll come back to Barbara and if she unmutes and can speak. So why don't we go to the next person?
Pat Jones.
All right. Pat, you are also on mute. Maybe what we can ask Barbara and Pat to do is send an email to the city clerk with the comments you would like to make. We're not able to hear you, and we can enter those into the record. Is there anyone else wishing to speak, Freddie?
Those are the only two hands raised.
Okay. All right. We have any final council comments or questions? All right, seeing none, this public hearing is closed. Our normal practice on a public hearing is to have the bill or resolution brought at our next meeting. However, in this case, I'm going to put that off. Our November 5th meeting already has high profile items on that whose applications were put in long before this one. So as of now, I plan on having the resolution for this site plan at our second meeting in November, which is November 19th. Thank you all. Now we go to public comments.
Yes, the public comments portion of the meeting is an opportunity for the City Council to listen to comments from citizens. It is not a question and answer session, and the City Council will not respond to comments or answer questions during this period. The mayor may refer any matter brought up to the city council, to the chief administrative officer, or city clerk if action is needed. If anyone is wishing to make a public comment, if you would please state your name and address for the record. Thank you.
All Do we have anyone wishing to speak?
There are no hands raised.
Okay. All right. With that, we will move on to our consent agenda. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any questions or comments on the consent agenda? All right. Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, say no. Motion passes. We will now go to our, bear with me a second, get my agenda back. So, unfinished business, of which there is none, and we will go on to new business, Bill 10850.
Mayor and Council, this is an ordinance amending the provisions of the Municipal Code, Appendix A, Zoning, Sections A-140, A-510.3, and A-1000.4 to add assisted living facility as a definition, special use in B2 General Business District, and the parking rate associated with the use.
Is there a motion for approval?
Move approval.
Do we have a second? We need a second for discussion purposes.
Second.
All right. We have questions or comments now, and I'll go first. Just so everyone understands, tonight is the first reading of the bill for the zoning code amendment. If this passes first reading, the next meeting would have second reading, plus, assuming second reading passes, first reading of the special use permit, and then assuming that passes first reading on November 19th, we would have a resolution for the site plan. But all of that is contingent on whether the zoning code text amendment passes. So I just want to remind the council that tonight, all we are talking about is the zoning code text amendment, which takes in the B2 district. We cannot get into discussions of the special use permit or the site plan. And if council members do start drifting into that area, I will bring us all back. We have to stay on this zoning code text amendment. So with that, I will go first and be very brief and concise. I am voting no on this. This use is not what I see for our B2 business district. I see vibrant and vitality in anything we do in the B2 area, and I am all for that. I just don't see assisted living as a special use category in the B2, something that is good for Kirkwood. Even though there is still a special use that goes with it, I just don't think that's something that we want to even tacitly encourage in our B2 district. So I will be voting no. Councilmember Zimmer, you're next.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to talk a little bit more about some of the research that I've done when considering this, looking at many documents, our downtown master plan, Envision 2035, the DPZ master plan report, and looking at all of the things they talk about, housing options, frugal retirees, singles on budget, urban professionals, affluent empty nesters. That's all from the DPZ study. The Envision 2035 talks about the B2 General Business District, and it says, commercial and retail that complement each other and attract customers from outside the district. My concern with assisted living in the B2 district is that many assisted living facilities are somewhat self-sufficient. It doesn't mean that all residents are homebound completely, but there is an element of self-sufficiency in an assisted living unit. That seems to go against what this B2 general business district code states in Envision 2035. It's not to say that we don't encourage age-restricted locations, because you know we have several of those in the city of Kirkwood, such as Jefferson Manor, Bethesda Gardens, and Concordia House.